On this edition for Saturday, April 11th, coronavirus cases in the U.S. grow to more than 500,000.
The goal of this fund has been to help as many people as possible.
Turning to social media for financial help. And keeping the faith in changing times. Next on PBS NewsHour Weekend.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments. Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.
Good evening and thanks for joining us. We are continuing to bring you our reporting from multiple locations this weekend. It is still a time of social distancing and crisis here in New York City. The virus is still spreading and lives are being lost. Even for those who are healthy, the coronavirus pandemic has stopped life as we knew it. Let's get started with today's top news. The coronavirus pandemic has claimed more than 18,000 lives in the United States. There are now more than 500,000 confirmed cases in the U.S., according to Johns Hopkins University's Coronavirus Resource Tracker. The epicenter is still New York City, where more than 5,800 people have died from COVID-19. Today, Mayor Bill de Blasio announced that the city's schools will remain closed for the rest of the academic year.
Having to tell you that we cannot bring our schools back for the remainder of this school year is painful. But I can also tell you it's the right thing to do.
A few hours later, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said he has the authority over schools statewide and that the mayor's announcement was an opinion.
So I understand the mayor's position, which is he wants to close them until June. And we may do that, but we're going to do it in a coordinated sense with the other localities.
Cuomo also reported that hospitalizations in the state are declining and may have hit their apex. But he said deaths from the virus continue at what he called a horrific rate.
Terrible news is the number of lives lost, 783 yesterday. That is not an all-time high. And you can see that the number is somewhat stabilizing, but it is stabilizing at an horrific rate. 783 people, 777, 799. These are just incredible numbers depicting incredible loss and pain.
The governor also warned that speculation about reopening the economy is premature.
You have to reopen. You have to decide how to reopen. You have to decide when to reopen. And that is going to be impactful. We don't know if there's going to be a second wave or not.
The coronavirus has killed nearly 104,000 people around the world, and there are now more than 1.7 million confirmed infections. People in London stayed out of parks on a sunny holiday weekend as they adhered to strict social distancing measures. Officials in the UK announced that 917 people had died in hospitals from the coronavirus in the last 24 hours, bringing the death toll to nearly 10,000. Across the UK, there are nearly 80,000 people with confirmed infections, including the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson. He remains hospitalized with the virus, but officials say his condition continues to improve and he is no longer in intensive care. In Turkey, the Interior Ministry imposed a two-day lockdown across much of the country to try and stop the spread of COVID-19. In Istanbul, a city of 16 million, bridges and streets were almost completely deserted. Turkey has also halted all international flights, restricted domestic travel, and banned large prayer gatherings. In India, Prime Minister Narendra Modi announced today that the country's lockdown would be extended, but did not say for how long. A 21-day lockdown was due to end this coming Tuesday, but many regional officials urged for it to be extended despite the hardship it's imposed on tens of millions of poorer Indians who are unable to work. And in Brazil, officials announced that the death toll there had exceeded 1,000, making it the first country in the southern hemisphere to officially surpass that mark. While many regions of Brazil are under quarantines, the country's president, Jair Bolsonaro, has ignored warnings from public health officials and flaunted social distancing guidelines. 50 years ago today, the Apollo 13 mission blasted off from Cape Canaveral, Florida, only to become famous for the astronauts' message 2 days later.
Houston, we've had a problem.
An oxygen tank in the capsule had exploded, keeping astronauts James Lovell, Fred Hayes, and Jack Swigert from landing on the moon's surface. The blast also knocked out two electrical power-generating fuel cells and ruptured a third. Quick thinking by the crew and mission control brought the astronauts home safely days later. The rescue is considered to be one of the greatest in American history. Paul McCartney's handwritten lyrics to the Beatles' iconic song Hey Jude sold at an online auction yesterday for $910,000. The scribbled notes fetched nine times the original estimate. The lyrics were one of more than 250 items of Beatles memorabilia that went on auction to mark the 50th anniversary of the band's breakup. Other items included a drum head and drawings by John Lennon. For more on the coronavirus outbreak and the latest national and international news, visit pbs.org/newshour. When it comes to COVID-19, there has been a great deal of discussion about whether or not people are asymptomatic and what that could really mean when it comes to contracting and spreading the virus. I recently spoke with ProPublica health reporter Caroline Chen, who delved into the data to find out more. Caroline, let's start talking about how do we figure out who to test, who to treat, especially if there is this possibility that we are now flattening the curve. How do I know if I'm somebody who's already had it and if I'm asymptomatic?
So I think there are two concepts here. A true asymptomatic person is somebody who never had symptoms at all. And there's another word that I'll introduce, which is pre-symptomatic, which is somebody who at the time they were tested and was positive, didn't yet have symptoms, but then maybe later on had a cough or fever. So we now know that there are both types of people, more commonly maybe that they're pre-symptomatic. And I think it's really important that we be testing people, you know, with diagnostic tests, so we can find these people out there, because we don't know. People can start transmitting the disease before their symptoms turn up. To your other question, which is, can I find out if I had been infected? That requires a different type of test. That's an antibody test that's done with blood.
If we don't know yet exactly when people start transmitting the disease, that makes it incredibly hard to try to say, okay, this group of people, you need to stay home. This group of people, you can walk about in society, right?
We now know, in fact, that people probably have what's called a really high viral load, which means that they have a lot of infectious virus early on in the course of their disease, maybe even before they've started to show symptoms. And so that's helped make this disease and this virus particularly contagious.
Because most of us, in the beginning, when this started, we were told, if you're showing any symptoms, stay home. And we did as best we could. Obviously, if I didn't have a cough, if I didn't feel feverish, if I didn't have all those aches and pains, I said, all right, well, let me just go to work. And then what happens if 4 days later I get this? So those first 3 days when I was going to the office, I might have been spreading it to everyone else?
Yep. That, unfortunately, is now what we think. And this is why, you know, the WHO and the CDC are all saying that social distancing really, really matters. And that 6 foot distance really can make a difference. So I talked to a lot of scientists and I said, well, you know, we've been told, you know, coughing and sneezing, you know, that's how droplets get transmitted. And this image was given to me by a virologist, Angela Rasmussen at Columbia. And she said, you know, on a really cold day when you step outside and you see that fog in the air, she said, that's respiratory droplets. And that's why people keep saying six foot distance, because if I'm already infected and I'm not yet maybe actively coughing, I'm still producing respiratory droplets and I could infect someone without even realizing it.
And that's one thing if you're outside. It's another thing if you are in a space that has either recycled air or not much airflow.
Yeah. And so, you know, a lot of the people that I've been talking to, the experts say that density matters, right? So if you're in a packed subway car where everybody's kind of breathing on each other, you know, it's much more likely that disease will be transmitted there than if you're in the open air.
Were any of the scientists surprised by anything that they learned? I mean, of maybe how this virus is behaving differently than previous viruses that they know about?
Yeah, so one of the things that I just mentioned earlier, this concept of viral load, which is when are you most infectious in the course of your disease? With this virus, you're probably the most infected right early on in the start of your disease course. Maybe even before you start being symptomatic has been a surprise.
And it's also going to matter about how we and when we get back to life as normal.
Because we know that asymptomatic transmission can happen, we're going to need to utilize, you know, both types of tests, the diagnostic test to find out if someone has active infection and the antibody test to find out if someone had a previous infection, to find out both where the virus is spreading and which people have been previously infected. These tests are going to be key to help public health officials figure out what to do.
Do they have any idea on when my body would form antibodies or how long those antibodies would last?
Yeah, so these are the questions that are being figured out right now by scientists. And so at the point you have just been infected, the thought is that the antibody tests should not be used like right then, because your body is still forming those antibodies to fight off the infection. And so, but they should last at least for weeks and months. And so you would be able to then look back months later and see whether or not you had those antibodies. The open question right now is what amount of antibodies you need in your blood to give you immunity. These tests are already being developed, already being made, but I think there's a lot of work being done by scientists to really study, you know, the amount in people's blood and what kind of immunity that actually conveys.
All right. Caroline Chen of ProPublica, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
This Holy Week, celebrated by Christians worldwide, coincides with the Jewish holiday Passover. Usually that means being with family for religious gatherings. But these are not normal times. NewsHour Weekend's Melanie Saltzman recently met a neighbor who is finding ways to cope and observe the holidays while being away from her family.
And, some parsley to dip in salt water.
Gloria Strong is my neighbor in Brooklyn, New York. We just met a couple weeks ago when I saw her on the elevator. She lives alone. That means this year, because of social distancing, she'll be celebrating the Passover holiday alone, too.
I think Emily's teacher has it.
Her daughter, Andrea Strong, lives nearby and visits when she can.
But we're going to get through it. We will.
Andrea stands outside of the apartment. Gloria uses a measuring tape to reassure her daughter that she's far enough away. What has this time been like for you with the social distancing and the isolation?
It's kind of lonely. I find myself crying at the silliest things. You know, I just start crying, and then I'll be okay. But I miss being able to touch, to hug my kids. That's the worst part. You know, with my daughter saying, you're not to go down for the mail. I don't want you leaving your apartment. I mean, it's too much.
That's how we met. I ended up seeing you going down and saying, what are you doing? I'm going to go get the mail for you. Stay home.
You know, going down, at least I could see the doorman, talk to someone. I mean, I feel like I'm losing my voice. I don't talk at all.
Strong, who normally eats kosher food, says it's been harder to find it these days.
All the supermarkets say they have no delivery. They're not taking orders online. Well, there's a lot of work preparing for Passover usually, but this year it's become very difficult because of being unable to get out to the stores and get what I need, so I'm just making do. You know, when I was younger, I don't think I appreciated family as much as I do now. I used to get annoyed with some of my cousins, spoiled brats. But now, it's different. I do miss seeing them all.
Strong says she'll especially miss a Sephardic tradition that commemorates the Jewish captivity in Egypt. What do you normally do for Passover? How do you celebrate?
One of our customs, which the kids love, we all love, is that we take scallions and we whip each other to remember what used to happen to the Jews when they were in Egypt and they were slaves.
So are you going to be doing that virtually?
Oh, I brought scallions. I'll just beat myself.
On Wednesday, the first night of Passover, Strong Seder Plate had the traditional symbolic items, including a boiled egg and lettuce. She used substitutes for the things she couldn't find, like a chicken bone instead of a lamb shank bone.
What will be different about this Seder from all other Seders?
And she still managed to be with her family, like so many people this holiday season, online.
Why aren't you hitting each other?
Are you guys singing a song?
Come on, start singing.
Let me get to
you, Mom. I love you.
Over the last 3 weeks, more than 16 million Americans have applied for unemployment benefits as the COVID-19 pandemic has ground the economy to a near halt. Millions of Americans are waiting for direct payments from the government as part of the recovery bill. Some, in dire financial straits, are turning to social media to ask for help. NewsHour Weekend producer Sam Weber reports.
In late March, author and marketer Frederick Joseph sent a tweet to his more than 60,000 followers. If you're short a few hundred bucks on a bill, reply, and I'll Zelle Cash App you, meaning I'll pay it for you. And he pointed his Twitter followers to a GoFundMe page where they could help him pay other people's bills.
I think we expected maybe for it to get to like $20,000, $30,000, and that's kind of where I put some of my marketing muscle in again.
Joseph and his fiance, Portia Landon, who is helping with the campaign, watched from their New York City apartment as donations grew. What started as a $10,000 grant from crowdfunding platform GoFundMe has grown to more than $240,000 as of this morning.
The goal of this fund has been to help as many people as possible, a few hundred dollars here, a few hundred dollars there.
Each day, Joseph, Landon, and a small team working with them are sending that money, $200 at a time, to people who ask for help on Twitter and Instagram. They use the hashtag RentRelief, but they pay more than just rent.
They're actually posting photos of their bills, right? You know, $200 is a lot for people right now.
Each transaction is documented with a screenshot of the confirmation from Cash App, a popular app for sending and receiving money.
We try to find stories that resonate with us, but also just be fair and even and, you know, try to see everybody.
Joseph and Landon say they've been deliberate about giving to people in all kinds of situations.
So it's not a matter of them having to be like, hey, I am terminally ill and have 25 children. It's like, I'm a college student who's struggling. So we're showing a spectrum transparently so that people don't assume anything. We're trying to keep people guessing so that there's no formula for them to follow.
One of those people who saw Joseph's original tweet was Walker Galtney, who goes by the nickname Sonny.
I was like, you know, it can't hurt. I mean, things have been really tight for quite a while.
Galtney started replying to Joseph's tweets each day. He posted screenshots of would-be scammers trying to request money using Joseph's likeness, a common trick online. And he posted about himself. The 33-year-old who lives near Macon, Georgia, hasn't had a steady job since last November. He wrote that he's negative in the bank and $950 in the hole on rent.
There's been many times where I've pretty much kind of accepted in my head that I was going to end up homeless. That way, if it came to that, I'm prepared.
Then last week, Joseph sent him $200, no strings attached. It wasn't enough to get him out of debt, but he says it's helped change his attitude.
I feel like I've kind of sank to a point to where I really don't see a lot of faith in humanity, if that makes sense. You know, so something like this happening, it makes me feel a lot better, you know, and I wish I were in a position to do the same thing he is.
Frederick Joseph's rent relief campaign is donating $10,000 a day, $200 at a time, as long as the money lasts. And it's not the only one trying to help people in this way. Philanthropist Bill Pulte has been giving away cash and publicizing it on social media since last summer. His posts offering help routinely generate tens of thousands of replies. And in mid-March, Writer Shay Serrano kicked off tens of thousands of dollars in giving with this post. Bleep coronavirus. Who has a bill coming up that they're not sure they're going to be able to pay? Send me your bill in Venmo. Despite all of these efforts, of course, the need right now is enormous, and thousands of people who ask for help don't get it.
There's so many people trying to get on there that, I mean, we're sitting on there trying to constantly comment, and it's like if you win the lottery.
Yeah.
CJ Edwards is an elementary school teacher, and Victoria Abnathy is a full-time nursing student. They live in Lakeland, Florida. To make ends meet, they both worked part-time at a local restaurant. But when the restaurant became takeout only because of COVID-19, they lost those jobs.
And we honestly have to prioritize, okay, rent first, and then how long can we push off the phone bill? How long can we push off the car payment? Because I have a car payment, I have car insurance, I go to an accelerated school, it's very expensive, so that's going to be another loan that I'm going to have to pay off when I graduate. So it's crazy to think, I guess because we live it, but it's crazy to think that some people think that a teacher's salary is able to cover that much.
Every day, CJ diligently posts on Twitter asking for help, hoping that this will be the day he gets noticed by those giving out money.
I believe that they're doing something incredible. My biggest thing is that I get my hopes so high up, and then I'm like, it's not me or it's not us. And I continue to try, and I continue to hope that maybe one day it will be. Maybe one day we can, win that lottery.
And for those of you who haven't been chosen yet, please don't be discouraged.
Frederick Joseph acknowledges that philanthropic efforts like his are not enough. He believes the kind of support that can make a real difference right now needs to come from government.
Rent needs to be suspended, right? The goal is that if it does continue, we don't want it going to rent. We want it going to the people who need groceries, the people who need to keep their light bill on. Because frankly, if rent is due next month and people are dealing with this for the next few weeks, the country's going to explode, frankly.
Sheltering in place means different things to different people. For some, it is lonely, even dangerous. For others more fortunate, it can actually create new family opportunities. NewsHour Weekend's Christopher Booker considers himself one of the lucky ones.
Our family Saturdays have always seemed to contradict the purpose of Saturdays, to unwind from the week. The day always passed with a relentless tempo as we moved from one obligation to the next. Morning swimming lessons, usually followed by a birthday party, baby shower, barbecue, you name it. And somewhere in between, a budget-blowing run to Target or Costco. There would certainly be a missed nap for our three-year-old, and both kids would usually crumble from their sugar highs in the early afternoon. The day most likely ending with neither parent sure if the weekend was half finished or half begun. But this is our Saturday now. We walk. Sometimes just down the street, sometimes on the bike path behind our house, and today, on a nearby trail. We have been socially distancing for 4 weeks. Each has been a little less confusing than the last. Our attempts at simultaneously running a nursery school and a first grade classroom are showing signs of promise, though I'm not entirely convinced our kids' teachers would agree. And as the weeks have passed, a routine has set in. And it's come with, if I'm being honest, a feeling of guilt. While there have been challenges and frustrations in our attempts to fill the hours for two very active kids, what our family has been asked to do pales in comparison to what healthcare workers on the front lines are doing just a few miles down the road from us. But when we're out walking, the day slows. Anxiety remains, but it loses ground against playing drums on a tree or listening to the spring peepers, those tiny frogs that sing of winter's end. Small little details that I can't believe we had left out of our Saturdays before. But now, part of something that helps our family feel normal, at least for a little bit.
PBS NewsHour Weekend wants to know how you are filling your day, so we'd love to hear about your new normal. We might even put it on our program. Please send us an email at nhweekend@wnet.org. Tomorrow on PBS NewsHour Weekend, we'll have news from around the world as the coronavirus pandemic continues to claim lives. And we'll talk about lessons learned from the successful battle against the Ebola epidemic in the Democratic Republic of Congo. That's all for this edition of PBS NewsHour Weekend. For the latest news updates, visit pbs.org/newshour. I'm Hari Srinivasan. Thanks for watching. Stay healthy and have a good night.
PBS NewsHour Weekend is made possible by Bernard and Irene Schwartz, Sue and Edgar Wackenheim III, the Cheryl and Philip Milstein family, Rosalind P. Walter, Barbara Hope Zuckerberg, Charles Rosenblum. We try to live in the moment to not miss what's right in front of us. At Mutual of America, we believe taking care of tomorrow can help you make the most of today. Mutual of America Financial Group, retirement services and investments.
When it comes to wireless, Consumer Cellular gives its customers the choice. Our no-contract plans give you as much or as little talk, text, and data as you want. And our U.S.-based customer service team is on hand to help. To learn more, go to consumercellular.tv.
Additional support has been provided by and by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people, and by contributions to your PBS station from viewers like you. Thank you.